Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. This is a special independent baseball episode of Bat Flips and Nerds. We've got a couple of very special guests, the first of whom we've been talking about having on the podcast for quite some time. It's our good friend who's based over in South Korea. You know him on Twitter as the Baseball Brit. We know him better as Joey Mellows. He's the man who's off to 73 baseball games this year. He's taking 2 years off work to follow and study independent baseball. Joey, how the heck are you this fine evening in South Korea?
Well, thanks for having me on, John. No, I'm champion, mate, champion.
Good, good. So before we get on to you, Joey, before we start talking about your adventure, I said we've got two guests. And the second of those is Brian Leiter, who's the general manager of the Gary South Shore Railcats of the American Association. So Brian joined me for a chat earlier this week. So before we get to Joey, let's hear from Brian. I'm delighted to be joined by the general manager of the American Association's Gary South Shore Railcats, Brian Leiter. Welcome to the show, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's great to be able to talk about indie ball, which I think is a side of the baseball firmament that my friends and colleagues over here in the UK maybe don't understand so well as the MLB or even the MILB, the minor leagues. So we'll start there if we can. Can you just explain a little bit to those who maybe don't know about independent league baseball? What's different, what's special, and what marks it apart from what they maybe see on their MLB TV subscription every evening over here in the UK?
Sure. So independent baseball is different in a couple of key aspects. Number one, we're not affiliated with any specific major league organization, so we don't send players or get players from a parent club such as the White Sox or Cubs. So we sign, manage, and take care of the roster ourselves. Our field manager goes through all of that, and the team works directly through us. So we have total control over our roster from top to bottom. Probably another unique thing is that all of our guys can get signed by any of the other affiliated clubs at any given time. So our guys have an opportunity to impress any of the 30 major league clubs at any time and move into their affiliated ranks and hopefully someday up into the big league club. Which is kind of unique. So we've had guys who have our teams, six guys in one season, go to six different affiliated teams, and it kind of ravaged our teams and ruined our chance at the playoffs that year. But that's what you want to see. You want to see the growth of our guys to move on to bigger and better things. And then probably the next biggest difference is the. Since we're not grooming guys specifically for a major league affiliate or trying to develop guys, we're trying to win. So there's much more emphasis on winning in our league than you'd find in a typical minor league franchise where the professional scouts and farm directors will say so-and-so hits third no matter what, whether he's hitting 350 or 150, he gets to hit third and get his four at-bats and we're much more goal-oriented on winning a league championship every year.
And what about the sort of place of the franchise in the community as a sort of hub for people to gather around and sort of get their sports fix? I think I get the impression that some of these places, you are the biggest sports franchise, if you will, and it's very much the place that people go for their entertainment of an evening, if I understand correctly.
Sure. So... in that respect, we're pretty similar to affiliated teams. We're located in varying cities of size, and we're staples of the community from an entertainment standpoint and being a good corporate partner through the community. We do all kinds of fundraising for various nonprofits and mascot appearances, and they're very involved in the community from that standpoint as we try to ingrain ourselves as much as we can. Here in Northwest Indiana, we're super fortunate to have a pretty good sized population base of about 750,000 people that we can draw from on an annual basis, and we try to get to as many of the nonprofit and things to help out Northwest Indiana as we possibly can.
So I said at the top of the interview that the Railcats are in the American Association, which is one of a number of independent leagues. So there's the Atlantic League, the Pacific Association, the Pecos League. I could probably go on for 5 or 10 minutes listing them off. I think I've got the main ones there. But what is it specifically about the American Association that we need to know? I know that the geography is broadly in the Midwest with a little bit of Texas, but is there anything else specifically that marks out the American Association as a special place for baseball?
I think that's the quality of the players that we attract. I mean, we have really great franchises. Don't get me wrong. The 12 teams are strong, really great markets, really great front offices, great ownership. But the quality of play from the baseball side probably stands out from it. Is every roster in the league will have numerous AAA former major league players on their roster, so you get to see a superior quality level of baseball in the American Association, and you'll see 25 to 50 guys get signed out of the league every year, and a couple, two, three, four, five of those guys will always end up in the big leagues. I think of Junior Gillette, who was the opening day starter for the Brewers last year, was in our league in 2013. So mm-hmm. Max Scherzer, you know, was on a max deal contract and, you know, with the Nationals, was with Fort Worth in our league in 2012. So, you know, there's a whole host of success of really quality players coming through our league, and that's what sets us apart from some of the other independent league is just how, I don't think people realize how strong enough and competitive the league is from a player standpoint.
Yeah, on the player side of things, one thing that people bring up quite a lot when they talk about the indie leagues is the pay and the conditions. I just wanted to ask you about that. I mean, I'm not asking you to stump for that. I'm not asking you to defend it, but it is something that sort of it's in people's mind, particularly with the minimum wage questions around minor leagues. I guess your position is that you're putting people back in the shop window, so there's a bit of a trade-off for them in that respect.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we have great facilities, and you know, I think, you know, people may get a little skittish when you hear independent baseball, but our league is super quality, and the ballparks are exceedingly nice. You know, our ballpark was built in 2002, and it was $42 million back then. I've worked in Double-A baseball for 5 years. This has been my sixth year with the Railcats. It's every bit as nice as the Double-A ballpark I worked at in Little Rock, as far as from an amenity standpoint for both players and fans. In some cases, maybe even a little bit better. You know, we have a set league-wide salary cap that we have to manage our roster to stay under. But the exposure that the players get to the 30 clubs is something that, and the guys that we've sent on to affiliated baseball, is there's tremendous value in that, that exposure and the opportunity to play at such a high level and perform in front of the different teams and have a chance to move, improve, and grow their careers.
And from your side of things, based on the front office side of things, how different is that? I was thinking just of one example. Your player recruitment, I'm sure, is not driven by huge scouting pools and analytics, but maybe more by word of mouth recommendations to your field manager and, you know, good old baseball reference statistics. I guess it's probably a quite a different setup to what we're used to reading about at the top level, right?
Probably a little bit, but our field manager has been doing this for 25 plus years and has a huge network of folks from the college ranks to affiliated major league scouts and folks that he's, you know, grown to know over the years. So yes, a lot of it is we'll get phone calls from various organizations on, hey, you should take a look at so-and-so for whatever reason it might be. So yeah, we don't have, you know, huge scouting and, you know, player development staffs that affiliated teams and those sort of things do, but our the vast majority of our coaching staff gets involved in some of the evaluating players and their networks, and obviously you can take a look at video and stats online and follow up with their coaches and that sort of thing. So probably much more grassroots effort, if you will, on making sure that we do our due diligence on any players we're going to sign.
And as the GM, what proportion of your time is based on the player side of things, and what proportion is based on the business side of things? I imagine it's a bit more weighted towards the business side than perhaps some of your colleagues in the affiliated ball.
So it's interesting. In affiliated baseball, You know, I always tell people that the quality of level that we have here in the American Association is every bit as good as double-A baseball that I came from. In affiliated baseball, as the general manager, you have zero say. The farm club sends you your 25-man roster and your coaching staff, and you get what you get. So it's almost entirely on the business end, which is what I came from. So I don't spend near as much time as some other general managers in our league do on player personnel stuff. I'm more of a facilitator on player visas for some of our foreign guys and contract processing and team buses and all of those things. Our field manager does most of the player procurement stuff. So I probably spend 95% of my time working on the business side, the sales and marketing and butts in seats and managing our sales staff and executing promotions and those kind of things.
Great. So moving away from indie ball in general and talking a little bit more about your franchise in Gary, it's about 16 years old. You said that your stadium had been built newly in 2002. So it's quite a new franchise, but it's been a successful one in that time period. It's won a few championships, and it hasn't had a losing record for a long, long time, has it?
No, we're very fortunate. We've had Greg Taggart's been our manager since 2005, and we've won 3 league championships. I think we've made the playoffs 8 times and 4 other championship series. And he's done a terrific job of putting a competitive team on the field each and every year. And we're very fortunate. We have a gorgeous ballpark, and the fan support that we get from Northwest Indiana has been really tremendous over the last 15 plus years.
I wanted to ask you about Greg Taggart, actually. I was going to make a point of the fact that he never has had a losing record. I understand from doing some research that he's thought to have a bit of an unconventional style. I think the baseball cognoscenti might call like a small ball manager. So he's a bit of an unusual manager in terms of how he approaches the game, if I've read that rightly.
Yeah, we some of that is the ballpark that we play in. You look out there and you see the numbers of you know, the 330 lines. That's not, I mean, those are big by minor league standards, but the way it plays in, we're right on Lake Michigan and the wind's almost always blowing in. It's not super, super conducive to big power numbers. So we go about building the teams a little differently than most, with moving guys along and kind of gap-to-gap power and things of that nature. So, yes, he certainly has a unique style of both managing and how we go about finding players, but it's been super, super successful over the last, 12, 13, 14 seasons that he's been with us. And it's something that you really don't appreciate until I watched it for a couple of seasons. You don't quite understand it because you wonder how you can have a team be so competitive and, they hit 20 or 25 home runs, but then you see how the ballpark plays, and it's just really, playing to the strengths of what we play 50 home games every year.
It's a lot of fun, though, isn't it? I mean, I've seen baseball played like that quite a lot, and there's always something happening. There's always a bit of action on the bases. There's always a pickoff attempt or something. There's something that keeps your eye in. Everyone loves watching big Giancarlo Stanton home runs, but it doesn't keep you engaged in quite the same way, does it, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, you get to play along, the little chess game along with them as you start to watch the game, knowing how we go about the attacking other pitchers and opponents, and get to see, hit and run, or would you bunt or sacrifice a guy over, where maybe some other teams are staying pat on the bases and hoping for a home run or things of that nature. We're always trying to manufacture and move guys over and play solid fundamental baseball. So you get to kind of manage along with Greg and see how it plays itself out every night, which I think is kind of a fun way to watch baseball.
Yeah, definitely. So you've said obviously you're not involved in the player side of things, but I'm guessing you're getting to the business end of getting your roster locked down for the new season, which I believe starts in a couple of weeks' time. Are there any players that you want to draw attention to on your roster? As a more distant observer, who you think we can keep an eye on this year? Who you think maybe have potential to be back in affiliated ball sooner rather than later?
So I'll highlight one guy who won the American Association Rookie of the Year last year, Colin Willis. He hadn't been in affiliated baseball, but hit 300 plus for us in his first year with us, and really came on and was tremendous for us in the middle of the lineup. And he's going to be back with us. He's a local kid here from Northwest Indiana. Went to college at Northwest Indiana, Purdue Northwest, and he's somebody that you don't often see rookies come into the league hit, you know, through the 315 that he hit last year with some power and RBIs and those numbers. So I'm interested to see how both the league and he make adjustments heading into kind of year two. I don't think he's going to sneak up on a whole lot of folks anymore, which I'm really interested to see how he goes. We have a young shortstop named Ryan Fitzgerald, who was a rookie with us last year, who had a really solid year. I'm interested to see how he grows, both on the offensive and defensive end. He showed some tremendous flashes last year as he got accustomed to playing professional baseball and the day-to-day grind that you don't quite get in college, that you end up in baseball with 100 games in 110 days. That's a pretty rigorous schedule. So interested to see how those guys fare this year, as they're going to be some pivotal parts of our team as we head into 2018.
Great. They sound like ones to put on the notepad and keep an eye on from the scouting side of things. So one of the reasons that we wanted to speak to you is that our friend Joey Mellows, who is going to be part of this episode as well, he's traveling around the States for the next 24 months watching indie ball games. He's from the UK. He currently lives over in Korea, and he wants us to have in the UK an official indie ball affiliate. We've already got a minor league affiliate, would you believe, the Erie Seawolves, with whom we've got a really positive relationship. So Joey wants us to have the same on the indie ball side. He wants to have a team who he can have a rooting interest for. So I think we're going to do a bracket, and the Railcats will be in it. So that's a starting point for you. But this is your opportunity to stump. Why do you think Northwest Indiana and the city of Gary should be bound with the UK?
Well, I think if you follow along with Railcats baseball over the last 3 or 4 years, as we take a little bit different tune to how we go about doing things, both from an on the field perspective and in the stands, and how we go about promoting our baseball is a little different than most folks. I'm not one to I kind of march to the beat of our own drum out here as we put things together, and I like to do unique things where we spit roast hogs on the concourse, and this year we're going to go a little against the grain and not have craft beer festival out here. We're going to have a domestic beer fest and pay homage to some of the 80s beers that folks around here grew up drinking in high school and early college. And nice. I think we're trying to come up with some ideas here and some things that are a little different. We give away beat up old used cars one game a year to fans, and they can just drive off and hopefully drive off into the sunset, not break down. We've had pregame midget wrestling, and we're going to have an Oktoberfest out here this year. So we try to come up with some more experiential events per se than just standard bobbleheads and hat giveaways, and that worked out pretty well for us over the last 4 or 5 years, and something that we're going to continue to do and try and push the envelope a little bit as we can with some of those experiences. With we did a crawfish festival last year where we flew in crawfish from Louisiana, which is a little bit foreign for folks up here in Northwest Indiana, but giving folks a little bit different flavor of some experiences that we have. So I think if the folks in the UK decide to hop on board, they'll get to see some creative things here. We're taking the Office TV show, which I'm sure you all are familiar with from the UK version, and we're highlighting that on every Wednesday game. We're going to wear Dwight Schrute jerseys and highlight a different episode of the show every Wednesday, and auction the jerseys off for charity, and the team's going to wear specialty hats and all of those things. It's probably our favorite TV show amongst our front office staff. So instead of just doing one office night, we decided to do essentially what's going to be a 10-game series to it to pay homage to our favorite show throughout the course of this season. So lots of fun stuff on tap.
So who's your favorite character in The Office, then? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I think Creed is super underrated. I think he's real. I mean, it's easy to pick, Dwight or Jim or that, but I think Creed, and kind of where he pops in and out, and it's kind of always out of the blue where he makes his impacts on the episode. And I think that he probably doesn't get quite the credit that he deserves. But now that I'm on my, ninth or 10th time watching through the series, I appreciate him more and more every time I watch it.
Well, that's the answer I had in my head as well. So maybe you and I can have Creed in common. I also must say I've got a soft spot for the relationship between Michael and Toby. I never cease to be tickled by that. How he can be so offended by the nicest man in the office.
yeah, I like that one too. That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Joey had brought that to my attention, and indeed, I was going to ask you about Pretzel Day as well. So
I wish I could. I wish I could come up with that. I could claim that was my idea, but that was one of the guys in the office who said we might as well have Pretzel Day on the office Wednesday. It made perfect sense to incorporate it. So yep, we're going to have Pretzel Day. We're gonna do Office Olympics and we have to rewatch some of them to make sure some of the episodes you don't realize we have to watch for some younger eyes now to make sure that we're not putting stuff out there that families can't be a part of. But we're really excited. It's going to be a fun one. We've got a great response for it when we put it out, and I'm looking forward to see how it plays itself out over the course of the summer.
That sounds great. I don't know if you saw earlier in the week, the Cleveland Indians seem to have stolen your idea with the way that they set up for Corey Kluber's birthday with an "It Is Your Birthday" banner.
I did.
If you saw that.
I did. It's fantastic. It's ironic. My daughter just turned two, and I did that at our house for her. "It Is Your Birthday" for him. So I thought I saw that earlier, and I thought, well, very well played on their end.
Yeah, but stealing your ideas, clearly they'd been the social media have been scouting the Railcats. Maybe it's not just the players on your field that you need to be worried about losing to the Bigs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anytime anybody, I feel like copying is the sincerest form of flattery. So if somebody's taking your idea and running with it, that means it's not just the eight of us in here that think it's a good idea. When other people start thinking and starting emulate it, that's a big win for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, if you can manage to incorporate some elements of the British show, then I'll be incredibly impressed with you. If you need a hand on a couple of references that I you know where I am, just drop me a DM.
Yeah, I might. We might have to take a look and see if we can do that, and see if we can. Maybe we'll incorporate a couple and see if any of our fans in the stands can differentiate them.
Yeah, I think Staplers in Jelly is a good one. Go back and watch the British one, and Stapler Inside Jelly is very important in the first series of the British version of The Office, and again makes me laugh every time I see it.
Perfect. We'll have to rewatch it and see if we can't make that happen.
Great. Last thing is just to ask you how and where people who've listened to this interview can learn more about the franchise. What's your Twitter handle? What's your website? And I believe you can actually watch American Association games for free online as well, can't you?
Yeah, you can catch up on all things Railcats at railcatsbaseball.com. There's links to railcatsbaseball.com. You can catch all of our games streaming this summer through our website. My Twitter handle is at railcatsgm. The team's Twitter is at Railcats, but I'll give you a little bit of insight into my world a little bit more so than the team one will, from what I see from when I have the pleasure of cleaning bathrooms and pulling tarp and all of those fun things that kind of go into it. So kind of a little bit peek behind the scenes of what happens in the baseball world outside of just beer and hot dogs.
Yeah, the glamour. I saw there was a photo of you on a ride-on mower the other day. I didn't know whether to be jealous or worry for you.
Yeah, we caught that turned out to be a little premature. We mowed and were excited about 40-degree weather, and then it snowed for the next 2 weeks. So, we're still fighting winter all over here a little bit. But, we'll get to some folks updated with my tarp pole sunglasses. I showed off when I got my Twitter handle going last year, I showed off a collection of about 9 pairs. I think I got about 25 different pairs of tarp pole sunglasses that I'm ready to break out for this season. So, we like to have fun. Minor league baseball is all about having fun and entertainment. So I'll try to incorporate a little bit of that into social media too.
Great. Well, I can definitely get on board with that as well as I can with the office weekly office night in Gary, Indiana. I feel really sad that I'm not going to be able to get over and see that. But there we go. So Brian, thanks so much for your time. It was a real pleasure talking to you. Look forward to following the Railcats over the course of the 2018 season. And touch wood, fingers crossed, it could be as the official UK affiliate too.
Yeah, well, hope so. Well, John, I certainly appreciate you reaching out to set this up. It was great to to chat with you, and we'll hope that folks over in UK hop on board and join us for a fun ride this year.
Thanks very much to Brian. I think you'll agree that that was a really fun interview. It sounds like Gary is a really great place to go and watch baseball. They do some fun stuff up there. So one of the things you mentioned there, Joey, was the office theme nights at the park promotion. I thought that sounded genius. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, just the 8 points for me last night then, that's all. the English Office 2001-2002. One of my favourite shows when I was at school. So, well up for that on a Wednesday, that's for sure.
Definitely. And of course, I set Brian the challenge there to get some references to the British version in there. So maybe it will be the 8 pints or lager, sometimes cider, different drinks for different guys. We've got the Gary South Shore Railcats out of the way, although they are going to get another mention later on in the podcast, and we'll explain why as that comes to fruition. Some of you may have seen a little bit about this from Joey's Twitter over the course of this week and picked up what we're going to do. But before we get into all that kerfuffle, I want to talk a bit about you, Joey. Obviously, I think people who follow you on Twitter or who may have heard some of your other podcast appearances already know a bit about this, but you are going to go and watch a lot of baseball this year and next year. We'll get onto that in a sec, but before we do, just tell us again how you got into baseball. It was in Japan, I believe it started.
That's right, John. Yeah, I kind of fell into it by accident. I was on holiday in Japan. My parents had come over to see me. I live in Seoul, South Korea, as you've said. And we flew over there. My uncle's actually half Vietnamese and Japanese. So we went over to Japan to kind of see where he grew up. And we were in Osaka and took him to the Kyocera Dome, second or third night in, I think. And they were playing the Chiba Lotte Marines, and kind of just fell in love with it, you know, the atmosphere and all the statistics and the action in Osaka.
Yeah, and you said obviously you live in Seoul, so the league that you get to see the most is the KBO, and you wrote a fantastic introduction to the KBO for us earlier this year. Your team's the Twins, right? So how many of your games of your 73 for this year? I know it was 74, but I know you got snowed out in Kansas City a week ago. How many of your games are going to be Twins games before you head over to the States?
It's going to be roughly around about 12, I think. To be honest, I'm trying to cut down on the amount of Korean games I see, because having put together the calendar for the summer, it's going to be a lot of baseball and it's going to be a lot of money. So I'm trying to save the pennies at the moment with the long trips down south. But I'll be watching lots of Twins games this season with a few of the other guys here that follow the KBO.
Great. And I guess the KBO is a good place as an expat to learn about baseball, because it's high octane, high fun stuff, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, if you've not come out this way, you know, UK fans, then I'd strongly recommend watching a KBO game. There's cheerleaders. It's cheap. You can take your own food and drink into the ballpark. On the weekends, there's a fantastic attendance. You know, we're talking 20,000 plus. The baseball's high quality. There's lots of stealing and bunts, kind of fun things like that. So it's well worth coming out here if you can to watch some Korean baseball.
Great. And your first game of this year was a pretty good place to start, wasn't it? It was the Australia versus Japan fixture, which took place about 6 weeks ago. And you were in the posh seats, mate, weren't you? I believe you got a bit of a treat from one of the ABL guys.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've got backflips and nerds to thank, really, for the interest in the ABL. The long off season, of course, with the MLB finishing. I really enjoyed watching that because of the time difference. Very easy for me to watch the ABL. So I watched a lot of that on YouTube and got to know quite a few of the players and the commentators. And that kind of eventually led to going to Japan for the first game with Team Australia. And Travis Blackley, who pitched that night, by the way, and was fantastic. I messaged him yesterday. He's still without a team. So if Bat Flips and Nerds can, you know, get on board the Travis Blackley for Independent Baseball bandwagon, then I'll be fully supportive of that.
Yeah, you want to see Travis somewhere down the line. He's a cracking guy. Obviously, we had him on the podcast before Christmas, and I had a really good chat with Travis. He's a really really friendly and likable chap. Very smart guy as well. So Yeah, get him in Indy Ball. Look, get him over to Europe. That's where we want him. We've got a few big names in Europe this year with Scott Richmond and Lars Anderson, and Chris Colabello might be coming over as well, the former Blue Jays slugger. So yeah, get Travis over here. We can all go out to the pub with them. But you know, equally, if he's in Indy Ball, you can do that. So transitioning away from Asia, sadly, because I know you're going to be going to Taiwan as well, obviously, which is, of course, as we mentioned regularly on this podcast, my favorite baseball league. What made you want to do this? What made you want to sort of give up your job and go traveling around and watching baseball games in the first instance? What sort of craziness led you to that conclusion?
Yeah, it's a bit mental. You know, my friends and family have been quite supportive, but I'm sure behind closed doors they've asked a few questions to each other about what's going on. I guess a couple of things really. Number one, it's, you know, watching baseball and learning more about baseball is something that I genuinely enjoy. So you know, first things first, I want to spend a couple of years doing something that I love. And watching baseball is, you know, something hopefully lots of people love that listen to the podcast, so they can understand where I'm coming from there. The second reason is really, I've been doing the same thing, mate, for 10 years now. I've been teaching for 10 years. I'm the head of humanities over here at Dulwich College in Seoul. Really good school, by the way, if there are any expats listening that want to send their kids to a good school in South Korea. But teaching the same lesson, you know, year in, year out, to different year groups, it's got a bit repetitive. So I need a break, and I was going to take a break anyway. And having saved up money for 10 years, you know, pretty religiously, I'm in a fortunate position where I can, if I want to, travel the world a bit and watch a lot of baseball. So that's what I'm going to do, and then I'll hopefully grow up.
why the focus on independent baseball specifically? Because you could do anything, you know. You could go and watch a load of MPB games. You could, as you say, travel the world and watch baseball all over the world. You could watch a hell of a lot of MLB games with the amount of money you've got. So why the fascination with the outer reaches of this great game that we love?
That's a great question. I mean, I think really I find independent baseball the most interesting and the purest form of baseball that there is. You know, these are people that are doing what, you know, playing the game not for money, because they get paid peanuts, but they're playing because they have a dream, because they love the sport, and they're going in, you know, day in, day out, entertaining local communities throughout the USA and Canada, small, often fairly small communities. They are, you know, often in suburbs of larger cities, but this is very much a kind of local park place where people can go who perhaps don't have the money for MLB tickets. I was at the Kansas City. Well, I tried to go to the Kansas City game last two weekends ago, as you know, and I think parking there was something like just $20 just to park the car at Kauffman Stadium. And that's ridiculous, really. So independent baseball offers something for everyone, I think. And, you know, there's some really interesting stories within independent baseball, you know, people pursuing their dream. And I hope to learn more about those stories and report on them for you guys.
Yeah, we're very much looking forward to that. So how many games are you going to see this year, Joey? I think I said it was 73 at the top there, because you'd had one call off. Is that still the aim?
I mean, that's still very much the aim. But realistically, looking at the calendar, it could be more than that. I'm keeping the calendar fairly flexible for the second half of the summer, so I can, you know, really follow teams and players and stories around the USA. But yeah, the first half of the summer is fairly well planned up now.
So that's kind of your research, really, the first half. It's finding out who you're interested in terms of teams and individuals, people who you can maybe strike up a bit of a relationship or a rapport with, perhaps, for the first half. And then the second half is when you go into a bit more detail of trying to follow those guys, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. There's about six leagues that I'm gonna be following. The Pecos League, or the Pecos League, I don't even know how you pronounce it. Unfortunately, I won't be able to get to. But all of the other independent leagues in the USA, I'll be heading to at some point this summer. So, if any teams are listening and they want to get in touch, then you know, please do. Even if it's just to let me park the car outside the stadium and sleep in the truck or whatever, that'd be great.
Yeah, all offers welcome, I guess, when you're doing a crazy quest like this. So are there any specific individuals or teams that you're focusing on from the start? I know, as we said already, you've developed a couple of pretty positive relationships off the back of the ABL, that interest in you and you gaining interest in certain players, perhaps. Are there people who we should be keeping an eye out alongside you?
I mean, with regard to teams, I'm being very open-minded. I don't have any, you know, there's no team at the minute that I plan to spend more time with than any other. But I'll certainly be following Alex Boshes. He's a pitcher for the Perth Heat. He was with the Wichita Wingnuts in the American Association last year. He's just been signed to the Atlantic League, and he's playing for the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs, I think. So I'll be following Alex. We're in contact fairly regularly. I've got someone in the US PBL. A guy called Nico Lollio, who plays first base for the Utica Unicorns, and that's based near Detroit. So I'm going to be popping over to see him. And a guy called Chase Simmons, who's a catcher for the Washington Wild Things in the Frontier League. So those are the three guys I've got at the minute.
Great. Well, that sounds like a good start. We'll put them in the notepad, and we'll keep an eye out for them alongside you. But I know from listening to a conversation that you had with some guys in the Lancaster Barnstormers, but that you've got some things in mind about where you take this. I think you were saying you might be thinking about writing a book off the back of it. Is that right?
I mean, that's what I've told people, just to kind of legitimize what I'm doing, I guess. But I mean,
don't blow your cover.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice, for the time I'm investing to actually be put towards something, more long term. So perhaps a book, but certainly I'll be writing on a daily basis, blogging about the travels and things. Getting an inside perspective of working within baseball from various people, GMs and field managers and players, third base coaches, fans, that go to every game. I'll be embracing all of it, mate.
Excellent. And in terms of the end game for you, is it a job in baseball? Is this what you think you want to do now? Maybe working for one of these clubs or being an agent for some of these guys or something like that?
Oh boy. I mean, I'm not sure. That interview you heard with the Lancaster Barnstormers, they interviewed me at 5 a.m. on Monday morning, and I got in from, a 20-hour flight at 9 p.m. So a lot of what I said to them, I think, I hadn't really thought through. But, ideally, I'd love to work in baseball. I'm sure lots of us would.
Excellent. So that's really interesting, Joey. I mean, obviously, we're going to follow you over the course of the year on Twitter and on our website. Looking forward to seeing what you get up to, what you learn, who you meet, and who takes you under their wing, because it sounds like you've already got some good offers, but I'm sure there'll be some more coming down the pike. So one of the reasons we're having this conversation now, and this was very much your suggestion and your idea, was obviously we ran a bracket last year where we tried to find a minor league affiliate to the UK, and our dear and brilliant friends in Erie from the Erie Seawolves took on that mantle brilliantly, and they still are and always will be our dearest friends in minor league. They of course, we're still working with them right now, but Joey, you posited to us the idea, well, why can't we have an indie ball affiliate too? And Tom and I were very keen on that idea, so we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do a bracket. I think we did 8 teams last year, but we've been a little bit more ambitious and far-reaching this time, and we're going to do 16. So over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're going to run some polls on our Twitter to try and discern and determine which of the 16 teams, which we're going to introduce to you in the next half an hour or so, should be the affiliate to the UK. Some of them you might have heard of. Some of them I think will be new to you, but they're all brilliant. They all are a lot of fun, as is the case of Indie Ball. One of them you've already heard from, the Gary South Shore Railcats. That's not to say that this is to prejudice any decision making. It's just that Brian and I had been exchanging messages about having a conversation for a while, and this was a good time to get him on the show. So, right, Joey, we're gonna go through all 16 of these teams, and we're gonna try and come out with a seeding. I'm gonna seed to you as the true expert here. So I'm going to go through these in alphabetical order, and I want you to tell us, in 30 seconds to a minute, a little bit about this team and maybe why they're interesting to our listeners at home. So let's start with the first alphabetically, which is the Cleburne Railroaders. Who are they? They're in the American Association, right? So tell us a bit more about them.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, can I say how bloody excited I am about this competition and how grateful I am to you and Tom, for being on board. This is really exciting for me. And, for the listeners, I've never been to an independent game. So all of this information I'm giving you is just from, hours, days of research online, which is super nerdy. But the Railroaders, if we start with them, They are from the great state of Texas. They're within the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. Claiborne's actually a city just south of Fort Worth. It doesn't have a very large population from memory. I think it's only about 29,000. And if you want to support the underdog, then this is your team. They have zero championships in the American Association. They have the smallest attendance, or one of the smallest attendances in the American Association. And I think from my research on this list of 16 teams, they've also got the least Twitter followers with 1,232. So get on board the Railroaders, guys. Because they could really use our support.
Well, I was pegging them for a sort of middle of the pack seeding, but it sounds like they could be struggling. But at the same time, I don't want to put them up against one of the bigger beasts and see them blown out of the water. So maybe we need to be kind with them in terms of their seeding. Well, let's see how it comes out in the shakeout. Whoa. So the next team is the Gary South Shore Railcats. We've already heard from Brian. They're also in the American Association, but they're one of the more decorated franchises in that league, aren't they?
They are. I mean, they've won one championship within the American Association, as it's now known, but they did have two in the former Northern League, which was what it used to be called. Fascinating fact about Gary. Someone told me a couple of years ago that in 2015 or 16, there were only 27 babies born in the UK called Gary. It's one of those names that's dying out. And therefore, I'm suggesting to all the UK fans that we get behind Gary, the Gary South Shore Railcats, and make sure, you know, that we do support a Gary in the UK.
Absolutely. And you and I, Joey, are of that generation where we had at least one, if not two people in our primary school class called Gary. We should support all those Garys too by supporting Gary and Deanna. That's a good reason. I love it. I think Gary are probably going to be towards the top of this seeding bracket in my view. So the next one is your hometown team, the Kansas City T-Bones.
Yeah, I mean, the T-Bones are the team I'm most familiar with, I guess. They've only won the championship once. They were founded in 2003. Which is fairly old by independent standards, at least on this list. They actually have one of the highest attendances in the league, just over 4,000 average per game, which is fairly impressive. And they're well supported on Twitter. They're in the top 12 supported teams for Twitter followers. Kansas City, if I'm being completely honest, is a fantastic city. I've travelled fairly widely in the USA, and I've felt so at home in Kansas and Kansas City. And for those listeners that might not know too much about Kansas City, most of it's actually in Missouri, the state of Missouri. Mm. I'd say about 75% of Kansas City is actually on the Missouri side of the state line. But the good thing about the T-Bones, for me as a Kansan or adopted Kansan, they are on the Kansas side, and it's right next to the Speedway and the Hooters and also the soccer team, Sporting KC. You can walk there in about 2 minutes. So lots and lots to keep you busy if you visit the T-Bones.
So you get cars going round and round in circles, soccer and other things, which we'll just leave hanging out there, I think is maybe the way I'm going to put it. So the next team are in the first team that we've got, which is in the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball, which for those who aren't familiar with independent ball leagues, is largely and broadly seen as the highest quality alongside the American Association. This is the one where the most players maybe go back to play in, if not in the major leagues, in affiliate ball. It's where Rich Hill played before he joined the Red Sox, before his meteoric rise currently with the Dodgers. So the first of several Atlantic League teams is the Lancaster Barnstormers. What can you tell us about them, other than they're named after the capital of the county, which I'm currently in?
Yeah, I mean, they've won the league twice. They're fairly well supported within the league, but having done some research, they're actually involved in something called the War of the Roses, or the Battle of the Roses, if you Wikipedia it, against the York Revolution. And every single game between these two teams, York, of course, Yorkshire-based, and Lancaster, Lancashire, they actually have this rivalry, and it's all on Wikipedia and it's all online. It's very, very close. I can't remember offhand who's winning the battle, but that's something interesting for UK fans to get involved with, I guess.
Yeah, love that, love that. We've got the York Revolution coming up a little later on. They're part of this as well. And as a Yorkshire County cricket fan, I'm going to remain neutral. another one with a nice and obvious UK, the New Britain Bees. What about them?
The New Britain Bees, I don't know too much about. They were founded in 2015, so a fairly new, well, a very new team. They've never won the championship. They have Britain in their name, so I mean that should help. They're based in Panoma, in the state of New York, they're actually the only representative from the Canadian American League, or the CanAm as it's known. So this is
one there, Joe. I think New Britain is in the Atlantic League.
Oh, fudge sticks! You're right. I've been looking at the wrong thing on my.
It's all right. So New Britain is in the Atlantic League. So I know about New Britain because I'm going to go to New Britain in June when I'm over in the States. So they're in the Atlantic League. They have only existed for 3 years. You're quite right. They previously their home, which is in New Britain, was previously the home of the Rockies AA affiliate, who now, of course, are the Hartford Yard Goats. So they've taken over the mantle. One thing I can tell you about them is that ABL legend Mark Hamburger is going to be their ace this year. So they're worth watching for that reason, if for no other. I think you had skipped on maybe to the Rockland Boulders, Joey. So let's
move
to
the eyesight. Not good. So New Britain Bees in Connecticut, obviously. My bad. Yeah. And they play New Britain Stadium. Quite a catchy name for UK fans.
Yeah, the home of George Springer, New Britain. So that's another nice link. And he has a quite positive relationship with the club. I think he does quite a few things with them. So maybe if we follow New Britain, we might get George Springer popping up. But hey, that's sort of maybe putting too much stock on their clout. Rockland Boulders, they are in the CanAm League. So I think they're the only representatives of the CanAm League that we've got on this list.
Yeah, you're right. I did try this. The CanAm League's made up of six teams, three of which are in Canada. We don't have any Canadian teams involved, despite, you know, my kind of best efforts to get them involved. So Rockland, we're grateful to have them on board. Founded in 2011, they've got one championship. They are from Panoma, New York. Please excuse me for my early mistake. And they play at Palisades Credit Union Park, which, from what I've been told, is a very nice ballpark to visit. One of the better ones in the independent circuit.
Great. So that's the Rockland Boulders, and they're lovely chaps on Twitter. We've had quite a few conversations with them, so that's as good a reason as any to get on board. So we're getting into the meat of it here. We're now moving on to the biggest franchise in independent baseball, which is the St. Paul Saints.
Yeah, so the St. Paul Saints are basically indie ball darlings. They're huge. They've got an average attendance of 8,296 from last season, and that actually beats all of the teams in the minor leagues all the way up to AAA, with the exception of six teams at the minor league level. So this is a hugely well-supported team, and they've made a lot of new supporters really from all of the stuff they offer off the field. They've got lots of kind of fun things going on all the time, including a pig that brings out the bat and the balls for the umpire.
Excellent. So the St. Paul Saints, I think, are probably going to be quite high up this bracket, if not number one. They've also got 23,000 Twitter followers, which again, I think is more than most indie ball teams as well. At the other end of things, we've got the San Rafael Pacifics, who are one of the four teams in the Pacific Association. Maybe not the one that people know the best within that four-team league, but another great team based in a beautiful part of the States.
Yeah, very much so. So San Rafael in California, they play at Albert Park. He's actually a kid I teach in my year 13 class, Albert Park. And they've been around since 2011. They've won the game. They've won the league twice, I think, from what I've got here. Mm. Once in the former league, which was called the North American Baseball League. And they've been really friendly on Twitter as well. Their average attendance is 480. So again, this is a real kind of underdog. Which, you know, if you want to support the underdog, then get behind the Pacifics.
Okay, great. And the next team on this list is the first from the Frontier League. There are several Frontier League teams to come, but this is the first. The Schaumburg Boomers, who are based in Illinois.
Yeah, so this is quite a big team, actually. I think, the third highest average attendance in all of independent baseball. They've got the third highest Twitter followers in all of independent baseball, over 10,000. And they're based fairly near the city, I think just to the west of the city of Chicago, possibly within the suburbs. They've won the league three times, which actually makes them the second equal most successful team of the 16 we've got here. And yeah, as you said, they play at Boomer Stadium, quite a catchy name if you want to go along to Boomer Stadium.
Yeah, excellent. And again, they've been incredibly friendly on Twitter. One of our followers, Andrew Cove, lucky him, he's moving over to Chicago later on this month. And I know that the Boomers have extended the hand of kindness to him and his young son, Tyler. I think they've won a couple of fans there already. So we know which way Andrew and Tyler are going to be voting. Let's talk about everybody else. The next one, another county cricket reference here, the Somerset Patriots of the Atlantic League.
Yeah, so this is actually the most successful team we've got on the list here. From my maths, we've got six championships for the Somerset Patriots. They play in the Atlantic League. They're very much the big dogs there, just ahead of the Long Island Ducks, who sadly didn't get involved. So Somerset Patriots, they've got a very high average attendance, over 5,000, 5,185 from last year, and they're based in the great state of New Jersey. So lots of people pop over to New York for holidays, and therefore this is one you can get across to quite easily.
Definitely, and we must make a mention for another ABL and CPBL darling, their number one pitcher, Rick Teasley. So you know, some good links there for our favourite leagues, Joey. The next team on this list is probably the one which our listeners will have most knowledge of, because very many of you, I expect, will have read or at least heard about the excellent book, The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, by Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller of the Effectively Wild podcast, which was, of course, set around their management or general management of a team in the Pacific Association, which is the Sonoma Stompers. Tom was absolutely delighted to see the Sonoma Stompers join in this competition, as was I. I'm just a little bit wary of them taking everything over. So tell us about the Stompers beyond what we already know, which is that they're sort of a celebrity crush in indie ball circles.
Yeah, they are. This, you know, the main focus of a New York Times bestseller. But surprisingly, at least when I, you know, was putting my table of research together, they've actually got the lowest attendance of any team on this list, 257, wow. Which is almost half less than the San Rafael Pacifics, who play in the same Pacific Association. So they're going to be a hard team to rank, John, because they do have this celebrity following, Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller. But at the same time, they also have the lowest attendance and can therefore benefit the most from UK fans heading over to San Francisco, nipping north. To the lovely area of Sonoma.
Yeah, I'm heading up to San Francisco later in the year, and I haven't told my dear girlfriend yet, but we might have to take a trip to drink some wine around Sonoma. Yeah, I think that's how I'm going to bill it. Tom has already been haranguing me to get him a Stompers t-shirt. I'm sure I can make a detour from the vineyards. Next team, another big dog in the Atlantic League, although not based on the Atlantic, confusingly, the Sugarland Skeeters, who are in the Atlantic state of Texas.
Yeah, so the Sugarland Skeeters are an interesting one because they play in the Atlantic League, but they're actually about 1,500 miles away from the nearest team to them within the Atlantic League. 1,500 miles, I quickly Googled it, it's roughly, you know, the same as driving all the way from the south of, you know, the south of the UK to the north and back again. That's how far away they are from the closest team in their league. This is actually, John, where I'm starting my indie ball journey in the summer. Excellent. I think I'm heading to see them. I'm just checking the schedule now. They're playing the Claiborne Railroaders. I'm seeing them play the Lancaster Barnstormers, of course, in the Atlantic League on the 25th of June. I'm there for 2 days. So we're looking forward to heading over there to Sugarland, which is a kind of suburb, I guess, of Houston, for those who don't know where it is. I will set, you know, put a map up on the website for people, so they can see where these 16 teams are based as well. But Sugarland Skeeters, it's going to be hot down there. But they've been great on Twitter as well. They have, I think, the fourth highest Twitter followers, over 10,000 again, at Constellation Field.
Great. And the next one is staying in the state of Texas, but back in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's the Texas Airhawks, a team I think you know a little bit about already.
Yeah, so the Texas Airhawks, they play in Grand Prairie, which is really close to Arlington, where the Texas Rangers play. This is kind of in between. It's closer to the Dallas side of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. But the Airhawks are a very interesting team. They've been given from the league, they're allowed to have 30 players on their roster for this season. Normally, within the American Association. The maximum is 23, but they've been given this exemption because they're going to have 20 players from the China men's national baseball team on their roster. This is caused some controversy within the league. But China, just to put it into context, they're ranked 22nd in the world at the moment. Great Britain's ranked 34th. So this is quite an interesting idea, perhaps something for Liam Carroll to investigate with regards to getting some Great Britain players playing indie league baseball and bonding as a team or gelling, whatever. But I can't believe this is happening, to be honest. And I have to keep checking it online that it's still okay. But I checked it about an hour before the podcast, and yeah, they're allowed to have 20 of the Chinese men's national baseball team on their roster, and they can have an exemption of 30 instead of 23 players. So really excited to see what happens with the Airhawks.
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting experiment to follow. Typical Chinese fashion, they've innovated, haven't they? You know, as they do in engineering and in commerce and everything else, they're doing so in baseball. Really interesting to see their process. I'll be keeping a close eye on that one, regardless of whether they're our chosen team or not. Right, next couple are in the Frontier League, which is again based in and around the Central States. And the first one of those is the Washington Wild Things one, which I know is definitely on your schedule.
Yeah, that's right. The Wild Things play in the very western border of Pennsylvania. They have one of the most famous independent baseball fans, at least on Twitter, who's a huge supporter, and that's Kayla Thompson, who runs the Indie Ball Island website. I've actually got an Indie Ball Island t-shirt on at the moment.
Excellent.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing Kayla there. They're quite an old team. The Frontier League, by the way, is the oldest league of the current, I think, seven major independent leagues that are running this summer. So they were founded in 1997, and I can't remember exactly, but they've got some celebrity thing whereby their Twitter followers jumped up by about 2,500 in a very short period of time, because some former kicker, I think, from the NFL is playing a game for them, or he's involved in some kind of game. So that's well worth investigating within the Wild Things.
Excellent. And the next team, which I'm guessing is based in and around the Chicago area, is the Windy City Thunderbolts.
Yeah, Windy City Thunderbolts, they were our last entrant, literally 1 minute before the deadline. So I was really glad that they got involved. I don't know too much about the Thunderbolts. They had an attendance of 1,672 last year. As you said, they are near to Chicago, so lots of people fly in there for Cubs. Probably not White Sox games this season, but that's well worth checking out if you're in the Chicago area.
Great. And last but by no means least, is already been mentioned as we've gone through this list, is the York Revolution, the other side of the Wars of the Roses, and a team with quite a lot of ABL players in there. Some of the Canberra guys, Frank Gailey and Travis Witherspoon, for example, have played for them over the last year or two.
Yeah, so the York Revolution also in Pennsylvania. I think we've got three teams on the list from Pennsylvania and three from Texas. They're the two most represented states on the list. They have a fairly fierce rivalry with the Lancaster Barnstormers, as we've mentioned, and also some fairly good Twitter banter between the two as well. I know Tom at the minute, he's following the Savannah Bananas in the Coastal Plains League of Collegiate Wooden Bat Baseball this summer, and they've got some great banter going on with the Macon Bacon, I think they're called. And it's very similar with the York Revolution and the Barnstormers. So they're well worth following on Twitter to see the kind of hijinks and banter that they got up to with the Barnstormers.
Great. So that's a rundown of the 16 teams that are going to go in our bracket. Now we've got to rank them. So I think we know who's going to be the number one, right? That's going to be the St. Paul Saints, I think. I've got to be our number one seed here.
Yeah, no argument.
Any others beyond St. Paul who you think should be ranked in any specific order? Did you have any favourites? I think you were right, but I was going to put the Stompers at two, but then, as you say, 250 a game's not really much to shake a stick at, is it?
No, yeah, I mean, that's the thing with the Stompers. So they are fairly hard to rank. I'd probably go, if I had to go second pick, I'd probably go Somerset Patriots, who are the big dogs in the Atlantic League.
Well, I had them at number three, so I'm happy to put them at two. So, who do you think comes in towards the bottom? Then let's go from the bottom up. I think maybe Some of the Frontier League guys, unfortunately, that being probably one of the smaller leagues, and the Pacific Association guys, maybe at 16 and 15.
Yeah, I mean, I think the San Rafael Pacifics probably have a 16 or 15 ranking, just because they come from the smallest league of those represented here.
And do you think maybe Windy City in with a tough draw against Somerset at 15?
Yeah, I mean, Windy City is an interesting one because they're actually, I think, the oldest team we've got, or the second oldest team we've got on this list, 1995, and they've won three championships in the Frontier League, which kind of, I don't know too much about them, but they are fairly storied and successful because of that history they've got. But I'll be, yeah, I mean, 10 or below for sure, I think.
Okay, well, maybe let's stick them in. I'll put 12 next to them. I think maybe we're looking at maybe the Boomers as a number three. They're well followed. They're a lot of fun. So let's stick them in at number three. So that's Schaumburg. And then we've got all of these teams in the middle here in the Atlantic League and the AA who are going to be quite difficult to rank. And it might just be a sort of a bit of a pick 'em. So we've got York, Lancaster, Kansas City, Gary. They're all good teams. They're probably going to be in your top six or seven, aren't they?
Yeah, agreed.
So what do you reckon? Do you reckon Kansas City at four, Gary at five, perhaps?
I'd probably go, yeah, I'm happy to put Kansas City at four, I think. Mm-hmm. Perhaps let's have a quick look here. I mean, perhaps the Barnstormers five or the York Revolution. I think York Revolution five. They've won three championships.
Cool. Love it. And then maybe the Barnstormers at six, and that'll already give them something to needle about, won't it? That'll be
very
fun.
Very much so.
So maybe can we put the Stompers at seven?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's fitting for them. And I had the Air Hogs at eight. I'm going to keep them at eight because I think that Chinese story is a fun one. And I also think having the Sonoma Stompers, who everyone knows, up against a team where everyone's going to be like, what the hell? I'm really interested in that. That'll be quite a nice battle, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a lovely choice, John. Well played.
Thank you. So where do we need... Who's left? We've got... I'm just taking off those where we haven't decided.
We've got to put the Skeeters in soon. You know, they are a big team in the Atlantic League.
So should we have the Skeeters at nine then, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we're still to decide on the New Britain Bees, the Claiborne Railroaders, the Rockland Boulders, the Washington Wild Things. I think that they're all we've got left. One, two, three, four, and I think we're pretty much done then. So 10, maybe Rockland. We can stick at 10. They're the only representative of the Can-Am.
Yep, Rockland 10. Maybe Wild Things 11.
Right, love it. We've got Windy City at 12. So 13, 14, and 15. We've got New Britain, Claiborne, and I'm missing one here. Maybe let's just stick New Britain at 13. Yep. Claiborne at 14. And I must have two.
Yeah, we've messed up here, John, because we've got the Gary South Shore Railcats still not ranked.
Oh, have we? Oh, goodness. I've got them at five and somebody. I'm the York Revolution at five. So, Gary, we can't have as far down as five, can we? Maybe should we stick them at 10 and then knock everyone down one beyond that?
Yep, I'll put that in now. So
I feel like that's slightly harsh. Apologies to Brian after he came on and told us all about his brilliant office setup. So we therefore have St. Paul Saints at one, Somerset Patriots at two. We have the Schaumburg Boomers at three, the Kansas City T-Bones at four, York Revolution at five, Lancaster Barnstormers at six, Sonoma Stompers at seven, Texas Airhogs 8, Sugarland Skeeters at 9, Gary South Shore Railcats at 10, Rockland Boulders 11, Windy City Thunderbolts at 12, the Washington Wild Things at 13, the New Britain Bees at 14, the Claiborne Railroaders at 15, and at 16, the San Rafael Pacifics. That's our bracket. It's set.
Fantastic, John. And you know, indie ball teams do get involved and give us some, you know, give us some abuse about this as well. But this is, this is sticking now.
We want everyone to be angry about how they've been ranked and to take their revenge in the polls. We want to. There's already been a little bit of action from one or two teams who have already started spitting some hot fire, putting some Union Jack pictures up into our mentions, and we want to see a lot of that over the next couple of weeks. I don't know how we're going to do this, Joey. Maybe we can work together and get some sort of NAF trophy, which you can go and present in person to whoever it is that that ends up being our affiliate later in the summer.
I'll be delighted to, John. A firm handshake, stiff upper lip, and a rubbish trophy. Here you go. But yeah, really glad that these teams are involved. And would you mind, John, just talking about how the competition kind of works?
Absolutely. So what we're going to do is over the next 2 weeks, we're going to run some brackets. So starting on Monday, this podcast will, of course, have come out on Sunday. So starting tomorrow, late afternoon, we're going to have the first poll in this bracket. So that's going to be the St. Paul Saints and the San Rafael Pacifics. We're going to run that for 24 hours, and then we're going to run a different poll every day until we have two teams standing, and the last two on the final day will go head-to-head to decide on it. So, yeah, we'll be tagging the teams in on Twitter. We'll be expecting lots of fun and lots of engagement as we had on the minor league affiliate last year.
Fantastic, fantastic.
So that's how it's going to work. And Joey, I think you're going to do a quick introduction to all of these teams and give them their rank in a blog post as well, which will be out alongside this podcast.
Very much so. Yeah. So look out for that on the Bat Flips and Nerds website. And apologies again to the Rockland Boulders there for my dreadful eyesight earlier and the New Britain Bees.
Absolutely no problem whatsoever. So yeah, this is hopefully going to be the first of many conversations about independent baseball over the course of this year. As you've said already, Joey, it's very much a learning process for you, and it's going to be a learning process for us too. So I'm actually, as I said, going to New Britain in June. I'm going to spend a day with them and hopefully get some interesting content for a special podcast about independent baseball in the shadow of one of the giants of baseball, which is, of course, the Boston Red Sox. And there's going to be a whole load of awesome, exciting stuff, a lot of which is going to be TBC from Joey over the course of the year, both on the website. And I'm sure we'll get you back on the podcast, Joey, from the middle of nowhere, I guess.
Yeah. If they've got Wi-Fi, then more than happy to get on board, that's for sure.
Great. So all that remains for me to do is to do the usual thing that we do at the end of these podcasts, which is to say, how can people follow you, Joey, if they're not already? And if they aren't, what are they doing? Where can they find you on Twitter, on Instagram, and everywhere else if they want to keep up with your travels over the course of the next 6 months?
Yeah, sure. I started using @BaseballBrit Twitter on Twitter back in November when I decided that this is what I was going to do. And that's the best way, to kind of keep in contact with me. I'm the guy that does all those league tables on, silly Twitter followers and stuff every month for the UK accounts and various teams and leagues around the world. So that's probably, if you're already following me, that's where you first saw me. I'll be honest, I've never really used social media before. I do have an Instagram, but it's, I think it's baseball_Brit on Instagram. And I tend to put more videos up on there from, from the ballparks that I visit, normally with some pretty poor, narration about the game taking place. So for videos, Instagram, and I do have something on Facebook I've started, but I keep getting notifications saying I haven't posted anything for 2 weeks. So that's @BaseballBrit on Facebook, if you use that more.
Great. So plenty of places to keep an eye out. And of course, batflipsandnerds.com is going to be your first port of call for all of Joey's excellent writing. And you will, I'm sure, have read much of it already on our website, and there's going to be plenty more to come. So Joey, thanks ever so much for your time, and thanks for all your effort in helping promote the excellent independent baseball scene in the States. It's been a pleasure for us to learn more about it, not just this morning, but over the course of the last 6 months as we've got to know you indeed. Look forward to hearing more from you throughout the course of this year, but I know you've been up for a very long time, still dealing with a bit of jet lag. So I think it's maybe time that you got yourself off to bed, mate. So I'll bid you good evening, and we'll speak again soon. Cheers, mate.
Thanks ever so much, John. Cheers, guys.